Russia's aggression in Europe once again has the world's attention. But the question we need to be asking is, how does this all end? Right now, everyone is caught up in the play-by-play of this escalating war. But what truly are the options? Well, Lieutenant Colonel and Senator Zach Nunn from Iowa, along with IQ Al Razuli, will join us from Europe. We will break down the options and what the world is truly facing. And then COVID continues to wreak havoc on people's lives. How would you like to be denied a life-saving kidney transplant because you refuse to succumb to the Mayo Clinic's demands to take more vaccines and boosters? And this is after the first one nearly killed you. Angela DiMaggio joins us to tell us her story, along with Dr. Henry Ely, on convening a grand jury to hold those accountable for crimes against humanity and the extensive fraud and rampant acts of willful misconduct, all in the name of COVID. A powerful viewpoint this Sunday, just ahead.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news, providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the Weekend News Magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. If Vladimir Putin successfully decapitates Ukraine government and takes control of Ukraine, what does that look like in the immediate future? Does it stop there? And, really, another question I ask, are the Ukrainians the sacrificial target for Russia's thirst? How long can Ukraine hold them off, I wonder? Is Vladimir Putin at the point of losing big time? And what does that look like by chance? Does he strike out at the world in defeat? Is the only other answer a change in leadership in Russia within his inner circle? And how does that happen? And who would that be? What does that look like? We'll start there with all of those questions, my fellow Americans, and to our friends around the globe here. And we'll start right up front here with Senator Zach Nunn joins us, and he serves in the Iowa legislature and is now running for U.S. Congress in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Senator Nunn is a retired lieutenant colonel with the U.S. Air Force. He's deployed 3 times in Iraq and Afghanistan, amassing 700 combat flight hours. Very impressive background. I just want to share with you briefly. He recently commanded a squadron tasked with airborne reconnaissance operations against Russia, where he reacted to multiple times by Russian fighter jets, if you can imagine that, right? In 2019, Zach led a USAID delegation to East Ukraine to oversee democratic elections, despite open attacks by Russian separatist forces. Senator Nunn, thank you for joining us on Viewpoint This Sunday, sir.
Malcolm, thank you very much for having me on here, but also talking about what is a direct impact to the American population with the future of Russia-Ukraine conflict. So thank you very much.
Yeah. So let's start with these really interesting comments from Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. It's a very interesting place to start. Now, here's what I will say up front to this. So potentially, Senator Graham said out loud style, we get what that means here, what many people are thinking, but typically a leading politician would not say that or put it in writing. So he put out on his social media, is there a Brutus in Russia? Is there a more successful Colonel Stauffenberg in the Russian military? The only way this ends is for somebody in Russia to take this guy out. And he said, you would be doing your country and the world a great service. Now, this was after he had conversation on national television about this. A North Carolina Congressman, Madison Cawthorn, came out and he said about Graham's message. He said, publicly calling for the assassination of a nuclear power is asinine.
Put it pretty well direct there. And a spokesman for Senator Graham said on Friday that Graham would like for Putin to be arrested, imprisoned, retired, or removed, and that Putin has to go and Russians will be the people who have to do it. So the Russian ambassador to U.S. response came back with a very interesting comment as well and said the degree of Russophobia and hatred in the United States toward Russia is off the scale. The Russian ambassador said in a Facebook post, it is impossible to believe that a senator of a country that promotes its moral values as a guidance star for all mankind could afford to call for terrorism as a way to achieve Washington's goals in the international arena. Wow, wow, wow. Boy, was that a tweet heard around the world. Now, what do you say to that?
Malcolm, first off, you highlighted, I think, what Lindsey Graham said publicly. A lot of folks have wondered privately, is there a round two for Moscow? You know, first off, I think a lot is going to depend on Russia's outcome in Ukraine. A Russia that ends up ultimately being victorious here, crushing Kyiv, destroying the Ukraine system of government, even if they do end up with a puppet regime there like Belarus. If they move in that direction, it will solidify not just Putin's position in the world, but despots the world over, from Tehran to Beijing to Pyongyang in North Korea, they will feel emboldened. So this could go one of two ways. The other being that Russia does fail in its objectives to be able to decapitate Kyiv, and as a result, finds itself under siege at home. Now, what we can look at very clearly here is within Moscow, Putin has done a very effective job of cleaning house in the years and decades since he has been head of that country. Mm-hmm. From journalists to anti-government groups, the easy folks have already been locked up, expelled, or executed. There is a real question as to whether that inner circle within Russia has the ability or the unanimity to be able to stand up to Putin in a meaningful way. We've seen Medvedev, his former president, pushed aside. We've seen some level of, state security apparatus, the FSB, the follow-on to the KGB, looking at Russia and actually trying to leak information out to the West or to Ukraine to prevent this from happening. But short of full-scale internal implosion, there is nothing that the West or the external actors are going to be able to do to Putin himself that is going to get him to change his mind in a way that would get him to leave power. So there's really only two paths that I see. Putin either has to be completely victorious in his own right in Ukraine to be able to win over his own home crowd, or he is going to fail in Ukraine, in which case there is a massive power struggle at the top. And I don't see at this point anybody emerging who can be the new prince that can decapitate the crown at this
point. You know, obviously, the only thing he has that is a deterrent at this point or that he uses is the nuclear arsenal. Without the nuclear arsenal, this would be a whole different confrontation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's important to foot stomp this. You know, with Russia's nuclear prowess, they have an economy that shrunk to be smaller than the size of Canada. Exactly. They have a military that is largely still conscript that is being showcased to the world as exhausted in just trying to take a country capital like Kyiv that should have been a very easy march in for them. The logistics behind this are strained, and we're only 2 weeks into this impact. That being said, you know, as a guy who's flown combat missions in the Middle East with the Russians flying in Syria, as somebody who's flown sensitive reconnaissance operations off the coast of Russia, and I've been interacted by MiG-29s and Sukhois flying out, Russians do understand strength, and they have a tragic destiny, particularly their leadership, to brinksmanship in a way that should never be underestimated. Putin is not the, you know, Russian leadership of the Yeltsin years. This is a man who grew up hardened in East Germany as a KGB officer, saw firsthand what the West did and what the crumbling of his government laid waste, in his view, to the decades that followed. He has a vision that is singularly focused on a reemergent Russia that should not be challenged by the West. Hence, one of the reasons he went into Ukraine to begin with. If given a fight or flight mentality against the West, fully expect Putin to fight down to not just the last man, but potentially to put the world on a brinksmanship with disaster.
Mm, yeah. You know, I've been seeing those images, and you've seen them as well, Senator Nunn, where you get the long, long table, Putin's on the end, and like it's way, like 5 miles down back, you see some heads there, and it's like the generals and the other people, whoever's in the room, are way removed from him. And I've been thinking about that inner circle, because clearly his generals, in fact, there have been reports of generals killed on the battlefield with Ukraine as well, by the way. But clearly these generals have families, they have children, they have grandchildren, they have, you know, they can't all be deranged or have, you know, screws loose, as we think potentially the head of state has there. When I draw out those scenarios and questions up front, Senator, it really is coming back to a, you know, like you say, there's only so many points here with Putin. He either wins or he doesn't. And both of those are not good outcomes, really, whether he wins or loses, because if he loses, you got to be afraid of what he does next if all the chips are. So here's what nobody's talking about. You see what I mean? Winning or losing. I know everybody's applauding the sanctions and this and the this and cut him at the knees and all, but I don't see it that way. And if we continue down this road, he is a cancer that Lindsey Graham put his finger on. Maybe not the way he should have, but hey, it is what it is, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, so Malcolm, well said. I think there's a couple of things here that the West should not be sitting on the sidelines for this. To sit in the Biden administration and just levy a bunch of mid-level, you know, sanctions after the fact was a tragic miscalculation. Any sanctions we were going to have need to be clearly defined at the beginning prior to the invasion. After the invasion, sanctions take months, if not years, to have the effect as intended. So here's some of the things I think the West can start doing immediately. First, you know, you look at giving certain individuals an off-ramp within Russia. We laid down sanctions and everybody became stuck in the same boat that Putin was going to go down in. So their futures, their success is contingent upon his success. Otherwise, they all go down together. I believe there's a pathway here to find some individuals who could be long-term allies and start putting them into connection with places like Germany, like the UK, or the US writ large. The second aspect is, you know, I think the British intelligence service has done a masterful job in leaking this information on the FSB is providing information to Ukraine. Whether that's true or not, the reality is there has got to be some internal paranoia happening within the Putin regime that they have leaks in their own element. I was a counterintelligence officer with a focus on St. Petersburg in Russia for several years. The Russians are already extremely paranoid of themselves. You add outside forces here that put them in a position where they now have to look down that long table and say, which one of my generals might be betraying me? And there becomes a real distrust and almost a malfeasance within the Russian superstructure of who is going to be executing operations going forward. And you also have to be looking to say, who else at this table has a knife out for me? And do I potentially need to take out the head of the snake if I have any chance of my own personal survival for my family? And then, Malcolm, I will say, you know, what we could be doing right now as the West collectively is helping out the Ukrainian government to fight for themselves, not put our boots on the ground, but to recognize there are things we can be doing right now. One, most importantly, is sharing real-time intelligence so the Ukrainians know what's happening and can take their forces and act. Two, and I'm an Air Force guy, we have a ton of MiG-29s of Russian fighter jets that are in NATO partners, whether it's Romania, Bulgaria, Poland, that can be given to the Ukrainian Air Force right now, and they can start flying their own combat air patrols. This prevents Russians from getting air superiority. I've even mentioned, you know, and Lindsey Graham is a fan of this, hey, get the old A-10s that the U.S. Air Force is going to mothball and dump them into Ukraine. We're going to get rid of them anyway. There are Ukrainian pilots who know it. They could strafe that entire 40-mile-long convoy coming from Moscow of Russian tanks, eliminate this right now. And the final, but perhaps the most important piece we can do is to say we've been selling Stinger missiles to the Ukrainians. That's great. If you want to shoot down a transport helicopter, have at it. But that's not what's destroying civilian hospitals, schools, and villages. It's a concentrated Russian air force that is clearing the pathway with strikes on civilian zones. Let's give the Ukrainians mid to high level SA-10s that are already available. These are Russian surface to air missile systems that are currently in Eastern Europe that were left behind or sold by the Russians to NATO partners. Put those into Ukraine. The Ukrainian military knows how to use it. Provide them a canopy of freedom above their cities so that their ground forces can do the fighting. That is the best way to destabilize Putin's regime is that he cannot move forward in Ukraine. And I'll end with this. If we do not hold autocrats like Putin accountable in Ukraine, then there is no way we hold President Xi in China from taking Taiwan, or a Ayatollah in Tehran from getting a nuclear weapon that he then threatens allies in the region, including Israel, or a North Korea from doing the same. This is the front line of the next chapter of America's national security.
What's happening right now will determine our status after this hurdle, this world event, won't it? Right?
Absolutely. And we should always be America first, but we should never be America the coward.
Stay right there, please, a moment here. And let me bring on here now, IQ Al Razuli will join us in the conversation. And IQ is in Iraqi exile. He's an Arabic speaker, scholar, author, political analyst. He has a current very interesting op-ed on America Out Loud, Putin in the Crosshairs. It's a little change of thinking, but well said. Right now, IQ, we have, as Senator Nunn was just saying, we have these mid-level sanctions, right? That's exactly. I mean, we're still sending the money every day for energy, which is insanity. Energy is at the center of this debate and conversation, by the way. But one of the other things is I want to give you everybody a current report on Putin's response to these sanctions. And listen to I could have predicted this. And this is brand new information I'm giving you now. So and from Vladimir Putin, he said he likened the Western sanctions on Russia to a declaration of war. And I knew he was going to do that. So as they're all doing that, he's going to look for any way he can to pull the U.S. in and the world at large at this point, because, as I just said, he's in. He's fully in now. And he threatened Ukraine with loss of its statehood. Like, what the hell is he doing now? Trying to decapitate him. If its leaders continue to resist, further, it wanted guarantees from the United States, listen to this, that sanctions on Russia would not damage its cooperation with Iran under the nuclear deal with global powers that Tehran and Washington are seeking. We're actually sitting at the table with Russia in the Middle East, and they're talking about this Iran deal, the JCPOA regurgitating that again, if you can believe that, people, as we're over here. It's a weird situation here. But these sanctions, IQ, which is all we're doing now is leveling these mid-level sanctions, as Senator Nunn was just saying, Putin has come right out and said he's going to see it as a declaration of war. He seems to be bent on pulling us in. When you say he's at the crosshairs, Putin cannot remain in power. You say, unfortunately, he unleashed a war that will cause him to be ultimately removed from office by his own parliament. Because for government to redeem itself by stopping the war and vacating Ukraine, Putin cannot remain in power. Talk about that point, please. How do we get him out of power? IQ, he is in power. What does that look like with the sensitivity of this conversation, please?
America is spending hundreds of billions of dollars in energy oil to both Russia and Iran. So tell me, where is the logic?
Well, there is none.
Of course, if there is none, how are you expecting to remove Putin? Putin can only be removed by Russians. You are not going to be able to remove. By the way, it is a declaration of war. Mm-hmm. These sanctions, as I said in my article, you are putting Russia in a corner it cannot get out of.
Right.
And when you put somebody in a corner it cannot get out of, it will use what they call the Samson option, which means if I'm going to be destroyed, mm-hmm. I will have all my tormentors be destroyed at the same time.
Right. Now pause there. That is perfect what you say right there. Just hold on a moment here, because that's been my sentiments from the beginning. Senator Nunn, I want to bring you back into this talk right there. That's been my sentiments from the beginning, what IQ just said. The more, just like an injured animal, the more you corner him. And I think the West did, I believe we went about this wrong. I think the only way to get a result on this from the word go should have been somehow to get Vladimir Putin to the table. But we don't have that kind of leadership right now. We have a vacuum of leadership here in this country and around the globe right now. We have stooges that are running the operation, the farm. And that's put us in this very precarious position. But that point right there, we've got him in a corner, just like a wounded, damaged animal that is only going to strike out. I can't see how that ends well. When he says a declaration of war and sanctions, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, IQ's point is salient here. And if we've highlighted, don't provide the Russian people or at least senior Russian leadership an off-ramp for this crisis.
Exactly.
They are, again, all in the same boat together, and their fates are now tied at the wrist. One goes down, they all go down. Yeah. So here's an aspect that we should actively be considering from history. Okay. You know, when Kennedy stood up to Khrushchev in the Cuban Missile Crisis, it looked like to the American people that Kennedy had been highly successful in repelling the Russian fleet. But the reality is, behind the scenes, we were also taking Jupiter missiles out of Turkey, and Russia could claim a victory in that as well. When you play geopolitics with nuclear powers, you can't have a one-side-takes-all victory. Now, that also being highlighted, you now have a Russia who has crossed a Rubicon, or Dnieper in this case, and invaded a sovereign democracy. And that cannot be brushed aside by saying Russia now gets to rejoin the powers of the West any more than the Ayatollahs can do in Iran. There has to be a clear response to say Putin is no longer going to be able to enter the world of national leaders. And we have to start providing that off-ramp to say who next leads Russia. And I guarantee that there are ambitious politicians and military leaders there who see a future for them untethered to a sinking Putin ship.
Okay. All right. Well, I like the words when you say an off-ramp. That's exactly the sentiments, I think, what we need to be thinking, because we've got him in a corner now. Here's the problem. The internal structure, what's happening there in Moscow, Senator, I mean, we can't really control unless we can pinpoint, a special operation that I don't need to go further with that comment that would accomplish some sort of an end goal. Then I think we can't really control what. So now you're back to what that inner circle looks like and who would be. How does that happen without Putin striking out? Because I think we all know he's very capable. I think we all pretty much know this. So here's the fear. He is probably very capable of unleashing hell on earth. And I've talked to plenty of generals and military folks here that have surely suggested he would be the one to do it. If he's going down, which is why I think we played this incorrectly here.
Malcolm, to be very candid, from a Russian perspective, and if you've ever read any Dostoevsky, you'll know very soon that it's pretty difficult. The Stalins of the world stay in power by killing their adversaries. Yeah. The Gorbachevs of the world fall out of power by negotiating with the West and trying to make reforms. So there's a very stark view within Russia that the only way to govern that country or to remain in power is through strength. I do not see that changing with Putin in the near future, unless he is at a point where Ukraine can completely consume his country.
So you don't think he backs down at all? You think he pushes forward no matter what?
Yes, absolutely.
And that end result, does it look like the fact you just take Ukraine and we all bow to him at that point for that purpose? Or does it look like this conflict goes to World War III and what happens next?
You know, I see kind of a middle ground here, it being much more like Afghanistan 1979, where Russia looked like it was becoming the preeminent world power. And over the course of a decade of excruciatingly bloody conflict, Russia eventually bled itself out. There can be some parallel here. I do not see the Ukrainian people going quietly into that good night. They have steely resolve. I saw it firsthand when I was there in 2019, monitoring elections. There were Russian separatists that put landmines around polling places. Right. And I saw 70-year-old women walk through landmine fields to vote because they knew how horrible life had been under the Soviet Union. There is a potential here where it is Ukraine that becomes the fulcrum that bleeds out Putin's Russia, that they just exhaust themselves on the pyre of ashes of their own forces being destroyed on the Ukrainian-Russian front.
All right. Well, you know, I got to give it to you. That is a really interesting answer back when you said when you pulled that third option out, Senator Nunn, with that third option and reference it to a likened of the Afghanistan and being mired down in this conflict. And it does potentially look like it could go there. You're exactly right to point that out. IQ, when you say he cannot remain in power and you say his own parliament, I thought you were very delicate in that paragraph, a little bit too much, because I don't think he gives a rat's ass about his parliament or the fact that you think or anybody thinks he can't remain in power. I think what Senator Nunn just said is very far more appropriate, is that he is in power and these Stalin-like characters are very good with decapitating their forces around them as quickly as they need to. So how do we get him out of power, period?
You can't. As I said, and irrespective of what other people think, only his parliament will remove him, and it doesn't matter what he thinks of his parliament. His parliament can remove him if enough of the Russians are get killed. And as I said in my article, if there is carnage, both sides, the Russian people will not accept it.
Those people in his parliament are in fear of him. They are in fear of their lives. He's built that up all around him. So how would they do that? How?
You remember Stauffenberg? So what did he do? He was in fear, but he didn't want to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. Had he been willing to commit suicide, Hitler would have been dead. The difference in Afghanistan and Ukraine, Afghanistan is a Sharia compliant Muslim country. Mm-hmm. They have jihad. That means they will go to kill because they will go and end up in Muhammad's whorehouse version of paradise. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different point of view.
Right. Yeah. Well, you say here as well, let's take this a little further. You say here, suppose the war turns into a great carnage, not only for Ukrainian civilians, but also for Russian forces.
Correct.
And I would say to you back, let me finish this thought. That is happening now. When you say suppose, it's happening right now. They've had senior military people killed on the battlefield. Let me make the point first. They've had all those senior military folks killed. It's a mess. You go on to say the Russian Orthodox Church would add its voice against the war. Under these circumstances, if they do that, Putin's days will be numbered to a few more months, according to reports. As I say to you, this is already happening. So what does that look like?
As I said, if Kirill goes against Putin, it's the end of Putin, because what kept Putin in power, that Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, was completely in love with him. Mm-hmm. If this changes, Putin is finished within 2 months.
Mm-hmm. So realistically speaking, IQ, you study this stuff as well as anybody. So let me just ask you. So do you really feel in your heart of hearts here that within the confines of the circle around Putin, the parliament, the church, this and that circle of generals and others, do you think that swell or ground force of conflict and animosity within the circle of that Putin is destroying Mother Russia in more ways than he would succeed by doing what he's doing? Do you really believe that would be enough to change this event, this world event?
There's no other event. There's no other way you can change this event. Putin is in the corner now. And as Zach said, he will do everything. If he's going down, everybody else will go down. The only solution is an internal change.
Right.
Internal from Russia.
Right.
As I said in my article, for Russia to redeem herself for what Putin has done, the only way is Putin to be out of the picture. Right. Dead or alive is irrelevant. He has to be out.
Yeah, I love what you say there. And I want you want to definitely go read this piece here. But for Russia to redeem itself, he says, IQ says, by stopping the war and vacating Ukraine. Putin, I mean, it just rings in your soul a bit when it's put out that way. Senator Nunn, I want to get back to you on that point right there now. Now, IQ lays out a scenario, let's be real, potentially, or maybe some hope. I don't know. You know a lot about, again, the geopolitics here and that circle of Moscow. Does that happen in time? I mean, so Putin does not remain in power. And to me, I don't know what that day looks like, because would Putin step aside at that point, or would he have a choice? We know he's a war criminal, but that doesn't really mean anything. It's only on paper, you know? So how do we get there?
Yeah, so this is where some effective off-ramps, I think, can be offered, both on the, you know, what the West can do, but then also to empower, to IQ's point, what can happen in country. First, I think designate Putin a war criminal, very clearly. Everything he has done, from striking civilian targets to, potentially a nuclear catastrophe with Chernobyl, to just the unwarranted aggression against a sovereign power. but then afford others in the leadership channel to not yet be charged. You know, once you're charged with a war crime, as Slobodan Milosevic learned, it's a pretty brutal life going forward when the event's over. There are other people who do not want to be in that inner circle, and they can start to cut their wrists from the hands of the other Russian senior leadership. The next aspect is, you know, targeted sanctions on Putin's golf partners here in the oligarch. We made a blanket statement against everybody in Russia and treated them as bad. That is clearly not the case, and that's not how you have a Russia post-Putin. You cannot make everyone in Russia the enemy here. And so identifying pragmatic, long-term partners within the Russian government who can work with us is something that we should be looking at. And finally, I would offer, you know, looking at ways that we can empower both the Ukrainians, but also the Russian people to start undermining their own government in the same way that we did with Eastern Europe. You know, one of the great things that I think Churchill looked at and said was there's three things we want with a post-constructionist Europe. We want to keep the Russians out, we want to keep the Americans in, and we want to keep the Germans down.
Senator Zach Nunn and IQL Rosulli, thank you for joining me here. More and more of our military heroes are getting involved in the front lines of D.C. politics. And this is to impact positive change in our beloved America. You know, think of it this way. They go from the battle lines to the front lines in D.C., right? It is the next battleground, my friends. We need to get behind and support Iowa Senator Zach Nunn in his run for U.S. Congress in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. He deserves our support. Now, to do that, I want you to go to his website, zachnunn.com, ZACHNUNN.com. Take a look at his agenda. Again, it's an America First, and we need to get more of these America First strategic thinkers to Washington, D.C., if we're going to win this fight, my fellow Americans. So please support him in this run, and we'll stay on the case here. Now, with all that, COVID has changed the world we live in forever, no doubt about it. We now know that these variants and pathogens will be with us in the future, and we need to learn to live with airborne diseases now. You know, new variants and these antibiotic-resistant strains are going to be the problem moving forward, no doubt. Now, I want to introduce you to the Genesis Fogger and HOCL. This is the answer. The powerful, well-built Genesis Fogger, and I have one, I own one, and I use it. It produces a dry, ultra-fine mist using the HOCL, which occurs naturally in our own immune systems, by the way, and this cleans the air all around us. You know, Genesis is the only technology that quickly, safely, effectively kills these pathogens and reduces the viral load in our environments. So along with a healthy immune system, which I talk to you about all the time, clean air is vital for our optimal health, no doubt. With the Genesis Fogger and the power of HOCL, you'll be ready for what's next, no doubt. All of our listeners get 15% off the fogger. You have to go to genesisfogger.com/outloud. Or just simply click the banner ad back at America Out Loud to get that 15% off. Okay, up next now, Angela DiMaggio joins us to tell us that story I was telling you about that kidney transplant, remarkable, along with Dr. Henry Ely on convening the grand jury to hold those accountable for crimes against humanity. All that coming up next on Viewpoint this Sunday.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCL to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCL may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly. Thank you, as always, my fellow Americans and to our friends around the globe for joining us here on the Weekend News Magazine. Just recently being like January, so pretty close by here, the Mayo Clinic, you might recall this story actually, they fired roughly 700 employees because, well, they failed to comply with their egregious mandates and mandatory vaccine program, their policies, if you will. And they had like a January 3rd deadline, and then they fired all these people, which was unbelievable. And a lot of these people could not have it for life-threatening reasons, as we cover all the time on the platform here, you know. So that was kind of interesting. And then, you know, these kinds of things, these stories are life and death decisions for people. Let's be clear. And, you know, I went through that in my own life. You know that out there, listeners, and many of you went through it as well. But they are life and death decisions for us. And it's not something to be taken lightly, even though the bureaucrats and these crazy people in the healthcare system are still pushing their brand of shots that they are demanding you take into your body. I want you to meet next a woman who, wow, has she faced this head on? And some of you out there can actually relate to this story, because the emails we get in here on a daily basis, it's unconscionable that these things are still happening. And they are. Please meet here next. Angela DiMaggio is here. And she's a teacher, photographer, writer, philanthropist, community activist, counselor, CEO, inventor. Boy, she's got a whole lot of things behind her. She's a published author and a businesswoman. And so Angela is, you know, this story was presented to me as something like, wow, you really need to get on this, Malcolm. And so let me tell you what I do know, and then I'll have Angela tell you the pieces of this thing. But so she was on a transplant list for her kidney, life-threatening. She only has about 15% operational in the kidney. And she was on there for almost a year or so, 8, 9, 10 months into this thing. And then she was placed in jeopardy and taken off because she would not subscribe to their vaccine mandate deal that she was put into that position. You will have to have this. But she had one prior that didn't go well. Angela, welcome to Viewpoint. And tell me that before this happened, let's get a timeline here. You had the Pfizer shot. When did you have that first shot, please?
I had one Pfizer shot at the end of July 2021.
Okay. And that didn't go well.
I had a severe reaction, okay, an adverse reaction. And I was really sick for 2 months. Listen, I tried to comply with their rules. I needed kidney transplant. I tried to comply. I got one shot and it destroyed me. Mm. I mean, aside from the regular stuff like headache, fever, chills, mm-hmm. cough, and leg pain, well, you know what? It's the sharp heart pains and the lungs filling up.
Yeah.
That really destroyed me more than anything else.
Wow. Wow.
When I told them about this, they said the shot doesn't do anything like that. The Mayo Clinic did not believe one word.
No, stop there a moment here. You're saying they called you a liar.
Basically, yes.
This is what it sounds like. They didn't believe you.
Yeah.
I mean, the definition of that would be a liar. But why would you lie about something like that? I don't understand why they would think that way.
You know what? You could lie about the chills, but you don't lie about heart pains and your lungs filling up. And, you know, yeah, I just could not take the second shot whatsoever. In fact, now they wanted me to take a series of shots plus the booster. And Malcolm, I'm positive that if one shot did me in for 2 months,
right,
that a series would kill me.
It scared the hell out of you, didn't it?
Very much so, sir. Very much so. Yeah. As I clenched my chest on a regular basis, that was not fun.
So you're now in the Mayo Clinic. You're on this list. You need the kidney transplant. And then you're waited. And what happens? Does the kidney become available? What brings this to a crescendo moment? What happened that you had this confrontation of being pulled off the list?
Well, I didn't take a series of shots that they wanted me to do in regards to COVID. And so February 15th, they kicked me off the list. Mm-hmm. Literally, they said, I went from being loved to no longer being a viable commodity overnight. And I'm at 15% function, and they could care less. They said goodbye, and that was it.
And so they pulled
and
you off the
now
list.
Now I have nowhere to go.
All right, so you're off that list there. And then you mentioned somewhere, or do I have this right, that there was even someone else that offered a kidney, and then you talked to them, or am I out of turn to say that, and they denied they wouldn't take that either? Is that what happened?
No, you're right. I did have a live donor come forward. In fact, I've had 11 live donors come forward. Three of them were very, very close. But recently, within this past week, I had another live donor come forward, and Mayo Clinic said that the intended person was no longer available.
Meaning you.
Yes.
Is there any recourse you have toward the Mayo Clinic, or do you know not really? Or,
well, I do have an attorney. And there's a lot more to this. I mean, there's age discrimination and a bunch of other things. I mean, I have a doctor at Mayo that offered me assisted suicide, okay? Wow. I mean, there's a lot more to it. Mm. And, you know, the interesting thing is the committee that decided on my life was a joke. One doctor that videoed me twice, one doctor, I have no clue who he was, one nurse that was just good for housekeeping, and listen to this, Malcolm, two social workers deciding on my life. And those are the people that comprise the people that decided to kick Angie DiMaggio off the list.
Let me ask you, do you ever get the feeling, the way these things look, and like you say, with the people you're describing right now, it's almost like, Angela, people have been brainwashed or something. I mean, it's the weirdest thing. I don't know if we all went to bed one night a couple of years back and the body snatchers came in, or mind snatchers and transposed part of the population, but do you ever get the sense there's a weirdness going on or something?
Oh, absolutely. They abide by CDC. Okay. And we know that CDC changes like the wind every moment. Mm-hmm. And they are sticking to CDC. And CDC says, I've got to have a series of shots.
Yeah.
And regardless of what kind of information you give them, they refuse to even consider what you're saying.
All right, let me do this now. I want to bring on Dr. Henry Ely, who I've asked to join us here, please, for a couple of different reasons. And everyone on the platform surely knows Dr. Ely. He's a licensed naturopathic doctor and founder of the Energetic Health Institute. He has been an amazing spark of light here through this whole COVID deal for a lot of reasons. He's the author of over 200 published works. He's the author of a series of peer-reviewed research papers. He and his team, because you always have to have a team when you're doing this sort of kind of work, this heavy lifting, is just made a remarkable difference. And there's a whole grand jury movement that he's been involved with, we'll tell you about. He has a show, as well as you all probably may know, that plays on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on Saturday and Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. You want to catch that right after the McCullough Report on the network here. Now, Angela, I've asked Dr. Ely to join us here, because he has such vast knowledge and experience in these kinds of things. And so the first thing I want to bounce at you, Dr. Ely, is you know, you and I've talked enough about this, and listeners have heard enough about this, that we have to ask ourselves always, where is the humanity in any of this? Right, and I've referenced the body snatchers or the mind snatchers because, and you probably laughed when I said that, but it is almost unconscionable that the population, they think a certain way, but these kinds of stories are all too common. And now here, her life is really hanging in the balance here as these people play ping pong with her life on some bureaucratic policy, which means absolutely nothing. What is your recourse with this Mayo Clinic? And what do you think about this story?
Well, the immediate thing that comes to mind to me is the American Medical Association's Code of Medical Ethics 1.1.3. It's very clearly stated in Section D of this Code of Ethics, which is referred to as the Patient Bill of Rights, Malcolm. Mm-hmm. It says, and I quote, to make decisions, the patient they're referring to here, to make decisions about the care the physician recommends, and I think that's a key word, recommends, and to have those decisions respected. A patient who has decision-making capacity may accept or refuse any recommended medical intervention, and that includes the inoculations. Mm-hmm. So when you tell a patient that if they don't do something, they don't get the care that they need, that they're paying for, what you're essentially doing is violating medical ethics. And every single doctor and hospital that does that can be brought before the boards that govern them with charges of violations of medical ethics, violations of the Patient Bill of Rights. And that's something, Angela, you can do. That's something that every patient out there, every person who's having these horrible interactions with these tyrants, I mean, they're treating hospitals as if they are prisons. And the people, these people that are doing this, Malcolm, that are wearing these white coats are acting like gods. They all have a god complex here. And they've completely lost any semblance of humanity and compassion for people and saying, listen, she found 11 potential donors on her own, Malcolm. There's no reason for a hospital to refuse to evaluate to see if those donors could be a match for her and save her life. This is a clear violation of basic morals, but clearly it's an ethics violation and a violation of the patient's Bill of Rights.
Wow. I mean, that's, I really appreciate what you put out there. Always going to the book and to the data, to the points. Which is really what we need to be doing here. Angela, that is a bit of information. Probably you want to get to your legal advice as well, yeah?
I've taken notes on that. And you know what? You're right, sir. Do you know how hard it is to get 11 people to try and donate? I mean, that's almost impossible. People are usually lucky if they get one.
You'd be lucky and blessed if you had one. So you're so right, Angela. You're obviously a loved person to have that sort of response. But the biggest story here is this Mayo Clinic, who really obviously has no regard for anybody's rights. I think people need to, there's something about this, you know, Dr. Lee, we all sort of like the Mayo is like, oh, it's like the Mayo Clinic. It's like Grey Poupon. You know what I mean? Like who gives a rat's ass who they think they are? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Come on.
Right. Well, you know, one of my favorite quotes, Malcolm, is from Dr. Maya Angelou. When people show you who they are, believe them the first time. These people are showing themselves to be just corrupt. I mean, how else can you describe what's going on? You may not have heard my story, Angela. My family, one of my family members was basically imprisoned in a hospital. Family was prevented from being there. They made all the decisions without family consent or authorization, and it ultimately resulted in killing my family member, you know, and we had to go and pay out of our pocket to do an autopsy to verify what's going on. But what's happening, Malcolm, in the hospitals right now is so far departed from the spirit, the foundational spirit of what medicine is to be, which is to do no harm. What's happening in every situation is emotional, physical, traumatic harm is being done to people that are trying to get help for themselves, trying to live. And this is a perfect example of it. It's unconscionable, it's wrong, and it's what we have to do something about. This medical system, as it's currently constructed, deserves to die.
Yeah.
First tenet of medicine, which is to do no harm, that they believe that they should be unpaid. Well, not unpaid, because all these people pushing the shots and administering the shots are making a lot of money, that they should be paid representatives of the pharmaceutical industry and put the interest of the pharmaceutical industry before the needs and the interests of their patients. And what it is akin to, Malcolm, is the same thing that we condemn on the schoolyard: bullying. This is a clear violation of ethics. This is a clear intent to bully. And we've heard this story for decades with moms, mama bears out there who've been telling us that something is going wrong in these medical rooms when doctors are constantly pressuring them, telling them if they don't get their babies these shots, their babies are going to die. I can't tell you how many times I've heard a repeat of that exact same language. And now it's extending into the adult population to the point where we have the corruption preventing someone from finding their own donor and getting an opportunity to save their own life. That these people, these gutless cowards, won't honor a patient's right to decide what's best for them since they have to assume all the risk. It's ridiculous.
It is, and we're outraged by it. Angela?
Sir, I'm in this position because of bad doctors in the first place.
There you go.
I don't drink or smoke or do any funny stuff, and bad doctors have put me in this situation in the first place. And now they've given me a death sentence because I'm at 15% and I have nowhere to go. And I mean, I'm just praying to God that I can find another live donor in another hospital.
So Angela, so right now you're in search of another hospital separate from the Mayo Clinic, somebody else who would do this, right? Right.
Yes, I'll never go back to the Mayo Clinic ever.
Right,
ever.
Of course. And but you're in search of that now, right? But there's got to be hospitals out there who will perform this, no?
Well, a lot of them stick to CDC. And,
understand,
and,
but what about those that don't? There has to be some, correct?
Well, I'm praying to find one. I'm praying on that.
Angela, you may need to really pursue a private practice surgeon who has the ability to go into a hospital. There might still be problems with that, but your best bet may be a private practice surgeon who can get into a hospital. And it might be in a very small community. It may not be in a major metropolitan area that you find that doctor.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Well, to save my life, I'll do anything.
Exactly. Amen.
Like literally,
amen.
You know?
Yeah.
Amen.
Angela,
it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. Angela, keep us abreast of things. I'd love to keep in the story with you, and I'd like to talk more about this with you. We can surely do that again. And thank you for joining me here on Viewpoint this Sunday, Angela.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. And, you know, what a story with Angela here. And Dr. Ely, I want to take the ball one step forward now and just set the stage, if you will, and of this. You have been working so hard behind the scenes that for this grand jury indictment that you've been working on, this is a massive undertaking. You're trying to get a grand jury to convene independently look at this, corruption, the fraud, the misconduct. May I go on and on and on and on? It's a long checklist here, basically. And, you know, basically Pfizer, the BioNTech, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and, you know, they can't be sued because that's the whole deal. When you sign up for that shot or jab, you sign a paper that says you're on. Right. Is that right or wrong? You can't sue them, right?
They have two major protections, Malcolm, the PrEP Act and the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, 42 USC 300AA. They have two major protections, but they're not impenetrable.
What you've just accomplished, give us a sense of the moment, please.
Well, Malcolm, what we've done is we have officially filed in the Ninth Circuit Court. A request of the court. It's very akin to what's called a mandamus act, where we're asking the court to do something. We're asking the court to impanel a special grand jury, or if the court does not have the authority to do so, to impanel a federal grand jury to investigate the allegations that we have presented of fraud, massive Medicare and Medicaid insurance fraud, false statements, and really the rampant acts of willful misconduct against the people of Oregon specifically, but of the United States at large. So we've put together what we understand to be the first demand for a court to impanel a grand jury because we got nowhere in attempts of working with U.S. attorneys around the country for the last year and a half. They blatantly ignored us and then obstructed justice after we refiled. I can go into that as well, but essentially we got a little ray of hope for the American people. We have filed the first case demanding that a special grand jury be impaneled by the Ninth Circuit Court.
Well, that's like equivalent to turning the spotlight on, is what that is. You're trying to really get a spotlight on all these egregious activities that have happened. What do they say the chances are for real? I mean, you've had a lot of, I'm sure, backroom conversation with legal and others on this, right. Because this is a massive process. What do they say the chances are? What are we talking on a scale? I mean, is it a 20% chance? Is it a 50% chance? 80%? What is the chance here?
If we go by the letter of the law, 18 U.S.C. 3332, Malcolm, it's supposed to be 100%. If we go by the way the law is laid out and we rest on our right to petition, and by the way, I have to give great thanks to Senator Dennis Linthicum and Senator Kim Thatcher, who've been unwavering in their support and our co-signatories as plaintiffs with me on this filing, it's supposed to be 100%. Now, can a judge decide that they don't want this in front of their court and throw it out based upon like something like lack of standing? Yes. So we actually proved our standing in our petition to the court. So we hope that that takes that away from them. But what we're really looking for, Malcolm, is a judge that cares, you know, and I think we got one in our random assignment. On this, we will let the world know about this petition so they can read it and judge it and the exhibits for themselves starting next week. But what we really want to do is just get to a good judge who believes in justice and believes in the law. And I think we got one. I'm going to put my prayers that we got one, because when you read the substance of our allegations, the necessity for impaneling a special grand jury becomes evident. And anyone that is interested in the preservation of our sacred union will take this matter seriously and let the grand jury investigate and decide, because the grand jury has enormous powers to call and subpoena testimony and get down to the heart of the matter. And indeed, Malcolm, when you read the law, the grand jury, once impaneled, has the duty to do so. And that's what can give us that opportunity to finally get justice underway for these massive crimes that have been committed, in our opinion.
I mean, what we're talking about here is accountability. That's what we're talking about. 100%. Accountability. Yeah. And there has been no accountability across the board. And I think a lot of people are looking at this thing. And as you know, listen, as COVID, well, slowly but surely becomes in the rearview mirror, and, you know, you have to look at all the egregious activities that have happened. It's sort of like, how do I say, it's like the world. It's like we all been through a moment of whiplash. Do you feel like, you know, we're, it's an accident and somehow we all got through a moment of whip? That's what I feel like anyways. And now we're being whiplashed again through this other international spotlight with the Russia deal. It's remarkable. You know, I've been thinking about that in past days, what the world has been through. There's so much drama happening right now, and it just consistently, continually does that. And the fear in people, and it's your heart has to go out to folks. Well, listen, that is a wrap from here. We are running right straight out of time. We will be covering much more of these pieces on the grand jury with Dr. Henry Ely. And there's a lot more to this story, but you have the sense now, folks, and it should give everybody hope and optimism that there will be people like Dr. Ely and others who will be attempting to hold those accountable. Isn't that what it's all about here again here? Now, this has been a big conversation today in a lot of ways here. A tremendous thank you to Lieutenant Colonel and Senator Zach Nunn. Tremendous, tremendous voice at the top of the program. And IQ Al Razuli out of Europe and all that was provided in that analysis. That was a remarkable story we covered up front there. And here, so many blessings were given to Angela DiMaggio for that kidney transplant. We'll stay on that story as well. These sort of stories really drive me to action. It's putting justice back where injustice is and defeating evil with good. That's the way I see these kinds of things, my fellow Americans. And a tremendous thank you to my dear brother here and friend, Dr. Henry Ely. It's time to get involved and get loud.